They were disciplined soldiers and would not disobey an order from their leader, no matter how mad it might sound. The enormous flying boat seemed to materialize in front of them, a dark spot growing larger, details becoming visible. Once again, he marveled at its size. It was difficult to believe that such a behemoth could even float, much less fly. Hurley pushed the cowling back and leaned out of one side of the plane, Hobbs the other. Dodge brought the duck up above the Boeing and then dove, giving his companions the best possible field of fire. Light flashed and sparks flew as the men scored hits on both starboard engines. The inner propeller continued to spin, but smoke poured from the outer. Dodge brought the plane up again to assess the damage before making another attack run, but was forced to roll the plane as the Boeing's weapons returned fire. Damn! He had hoped the Boeing's occupants would have taken a bit longer to register the tiny plane's presence, but no such luck. What was more, the damage they had dealt to its engine was sufficient to draw the crew's attention, but not enough to slow the plane's progress. He rolled again as another burst of fire threatened to knock them from the sky. The duck took a glancing hit to the fuselage, forcing Dodge to take it into a dive and then climb again as the Boeing's gunners adjusted their fire. "What now?" Hurley shouted. Dodge had only one answer. The Boeing was too large, could withstand too much damage. He had to do something desperate, crazy. Heart in his throat, he shouted back to his men, "Hang on, and be ready to move." He didn't add that there was a fair chance none of them would be able to move when this was over, but they had certain protections, high-tech exoskeletons that would keep them safe. He hoped. "Here goes nothing." He pushed the stick forward, and the tiny craft dove like a bird of prey, closer, closer. And then it swooped down onto the tail section of the giant X-314. The duck's propeller blades sliced through the aluminum skin like hot knives through melted butter. With an ear-splitting shriek and a thunderous boom, the duck smashed into the Boeing's cabin. "Dodge," he thought, as the duck's wings snapped off and its remaining fuel sprayed out onto the deck and a spark from the smoldering engine set it alight. "You'd better hope you haven't killed us all." Chapter 1.
"We got a hit."
Dane Maddock looked away from the view through the forward windscreen, a vast, limitless expanse of deep sapphire blue water dazzling in the afternoon sun, and over to the console where his friend Corey Dean sat hunched over the display of a laptop computer. Before Maddock could ask Corey to elaborate, the imposing 6.5-foot-tall form of Maddock's partner and soon-to-be brother-in-law, Uriah Bones Bonebreak, appeared in the doorway behind him.
"Did we find it?"
Bones asked eagerly.
"Not sure what we found," Corey said, peering at the screen. "It's big."
"That's what she said," Bones quipped.
Corey studied the image a few seconds longer, then leaned back with a disappointed sigh.
"But it's not big enough."
"That's what she said to Maddock," Bones said.
Maddock, who had long ago developed an immunity to his friend's off-color put-downs, heard the note of disappointment in Bones's voice.
"What are we looking at, Corey?"
Corey turned the screen so Maddock could see it from the helm station. The image was orange and grainy, a computer-generated visual interpretation of sound waves bouncing off the seafloor. To an untrained eye, it looked like so much static, but Maddock had seen enough side-scan sonar profiles to recognize the straight lines of a man-made object. Corey, however, was the expert.
"It's in several pieces. Whatever it was broke up before it reached the bottom. This largest piece is what got my attention. It's long and narrow."
Maddock leveled a finger at Bones.
"Don't say it."
Bones just kept grinning.
"I'd say about 100 feet in length," Corey said. "The Warata was 500 feet long. There's not enough debris to indicate a ship that large."
Maddock stared at the image intently.
"Judging by the shape, I'd be more inclined to say we're looking at an aircraft. Anything like that on the charts?"
"Let me check."
Corey tapped in a few commands, then managed a hopeful grin.
"Nope, we're the first to record anything here."
Here was the waters of the continental shelf, about 200 miles off the tip of South Africa. Maddock and his treasure-hunting crew, Bones and Corey, along with Willis Sanders and Matt Barnaby, were plying the waters of the Southern Hemisphere aboard his 80-foot motor yacht Seafoam, halfway around the world from their usual stomping grounds in the Atlantic, to investigate the almost legendary disappearance of the SS Warata. In 1909, the Warata, a 500-foot-long cargo liner with